Good morning, this is Brian Trumbor with the Week in Review for Saturday, January 16th. The other day I was telling my longtime friend at buyandhold.com, Trevor, about all the changes going on in my life and how it's been a bit chaotic, especially these past few weeks, and he best summed it up. Change is good, he said. So while I bemoaned my fate, namely taking on the task of moving a life's worth of stuff alone, I kept thinking change is good and this too shall pass. It also helped that as I jumped from one place to another, the sports talk shows I caught on the radio were filled with entertaining Jets news for those of us who are fans, as well as some further depressing news on my Mets. So here's what I've done. Stocks and news will turn 11 next month, including my time writing a Week in Review column at PIMCO dating back to 1997. It's been about 12 and a half years, and I've taken a grand total of 1 week off. Oh, sure, I've traveled the world in that time, but the work has always continued. Even if I did treat myself to an occasional late afternoon or evening meal with some premium lager, on my international trips, that is. It was almost 16 years ago, though, that I first purchased a large townhome, 3 bedrooms, 4 baths on 4 levels, in New Providence, New Jersey, the town next to where I grew up, Summit. 11 years ago, when I shocked my friends at PIMCO and myself by walking away from a great position, I started Stocks and News and took an office in downtown Summit because I thought I needed to get out of the house and that it would help in the discipline area. I literally come to the office for at least part of each day of the week, including Saturdays and Sundays. The last summer, I noticed a new condo building that had been going up at the height of the bubble in Summit was holding an open house and checked it out. The developer, who I knew was nuts when he started construction in early 2007, if I recall, had sought to receive $750,000 for the condos, but was now renting. I loved what I saw, and the wheels started turning. I also act fast. I bought my house in 5 minutes and buy cars in 50 seconds, and I'm ticked when the paperwork takes 15 minutes. Thus, after looking at the condo that was now being offered to rent, 2 blocks from where my high school alma mater plays football and a great running track, key for me, I put my townhouse on the market about September 1st, signed a lease on the new 2-bedroom condo apartment, and began a slow, strategic, didn't want my landlord to know, move from my Summit office where I've been paying $1,500 a month in rent. And then nothing happened. I talked to my attorney in town, the premier expert on the local housing market, and he said I had the right niche. I thought I'd sell by November 1st. Then November 15th rolled around and I began to get a bit depressed. Of course, I knew that nothing moves in the winter in these parts, and I thought if the economy had a double dip, a growing concern on my part, I could be holding my house in August, all the while paying rent, a lot, on the new place. Last along came a young Chinese couple. They attended every open house, as my realtor told me, and began to sniff around on an offer. They said they were paying all cash. Turns out Daddy back home was supplying it, but Sam set a ridiculously low bid about 6 weeks ago, and then we started negotiating. I came down more than he went up, but before I knew it, closing was set for January 15, and that was about 4 weeks away. Thus the stress factor. Picture that I've accumulated 9 rooms worth of stuff over my life, including at least 1,000 books and 100 paintings and pictures, and that's just for starters. Now I had to cram the 9 rooms into 3. I had all sorts of offers of assistance in the big move, but only I knew what went to the new place, what went into my terrific climate-controlled storage space, and what went into the Summit dump. So this was my cross to bear, and as I write, the closing is taking place, and I'll finally spend my first night in a new place tonight. Maybe. But I've learned a lot. There are a few things better in life than throwing things out, and the Summit dump is my new favorite spot. I mean, I haven't... I have a ton of world maps that I framed. I need only one, if that, given the internet, as my mother reminded me. Crash, down into the dump they went. So give me another 2 weeks and I'll be settled into my new routine. I may actually treat myself to an extra 15 minutes of sleep. I realize that including my last 9 years at PIMCO, for 20 years I've been getting up at 4:30 like clockwork. That's insane, to say the least. Financially, while I'm not about to tell you everything, let me say this. Most of you know I have a large investment in China, along with others, and I simply don't want to touch it for at least another 2 years, or until it hits my hoped-for price target. But a year from now, I saw a day when I might have to start selling some of it, while at the same time I want to do some major items on the video front for the site around May 1st. It will require capital, even as I slash cost elsewhere. No bank is about to give me a big loan these days, and there I was sitting on an asset that, despite the collapse in the housing market, was worth considerably more than what I paid for it, let alone a low mortgage balance. Voila! I made out very well. If all goes as planned, in 2 years I'm back in the market, if I want to. Some of my new neighbors say they wish they had done what I'm doing years ago. I just thought now was as good a time as any to give you a little update on your editor. Needless to say, the fact that I'm single made it easier to make some of the drastic decisions I have in the past few months. Change is good. Believe me, what I did was a no-brainer. Looking ahead, I'll resume my travel, starting with a trip to Albania and the Republic of Georgia in April, and then launch a nightly newscast that I hope will blow people away. Speaking of the news, however, I wasn't in touch with it nearly enough this week, so I present an abbreviated version. Let's just say that the buyer of my townhome, the Chinese couple, represented a classic example of a century still in its infancy. There's a reason why it often feels like the Chinese are taking over the world. They believe this is their time and nothing is going to stop them. Like Sam. Here we went to contract and you all know the drill. You don't then keep coming over to measure every room, bringing your contractors until the freaking closing. But Sam insisted on stopping by more than once, and after bitching, I'd relent. He has 5 minutes, I told my realtor, no more. So on the day I'm moving, the furniture, I heartily recommend Chatham Moving and Storage, super outfit, Sam comes over with his kitchen guy. The contractor stayed just 5 minutes. I'm directing the three movers. This goes to Summit, this goes to Storage, etc. But after about 15 minutes, I'm thinking, where's Sam? He was in another section of the house snapping photos of every nook and cranny. I was in a bad mood, totally stressed out, and told him, get out of here. He gave me a hurt look, and I reminded him we hadn't closed yet. It's still my place, not his. I had already bent over backwards to accommodate the guy. Now get lost. I know China well. I've been to see my investment in Fuzhou, Fujian province, twice. I've been to Shanghai, Hong Kong 4 times, and so on. It's an attitude, and it's why they are successful. I was telling some folks how careful I am when I'm overseas to be respectful, always thinking I am an ambassador for my country, and for a lot of people, they will form a lasting impression of America based on a conversation I may have had with them or how I treat the wait staff, etc. With the Chinese, they have a sense of entitlement right from the beginning. That's why it's China's century. They have been beaten down for far too long, and they aren't going to take it anymore. You see that reflected on a daily basis in the actions of the commie government of theirs. Like in the case of Google. Google claimed it had been severely hacked in China, with the latter stealing valuable corporate secrets from its systems, including efforts to access the Gmail accounts of Chinese dissidents. Google says it was threatening to pull out of China, the biggest market in the world, because of this. At least 33 other firms, including Juniper Networks, Yahoo, and Northrop Grumman, have also suffered recent cyber attacks from the People's Republic. It has now become a huge diplomatic issue. The Obama administration still feels like it needs China's support when it comes to North Korea and Iran, as if that has helped. And there is also that whole thing about who is the largest buyer of U.S. government debt. China manipulates its currency to serve its purposes and couldn't give a damn about the rest of the world. The rest of us, particularly Asia, though, like it when China's imports rise 56%, as they did in December, because that reflects well on their own economies. The Middle East loves China's growth story because they can sell it more oil, even as the United States uses less. But with the Google case, a line has been drawn, and even Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was forced to say the administration has frequently made clear to the Chinese our views on the importance of unrestricted internet use as well as cybersecurity. We look to the Chinese for an explanation. To which a Chinese foreign ministry spokesman said that his nation's law proscribes any form of hacking activity and that China's internet is open and the Chinese government encourages development of the internet. But then the official website of the State Council said the government will continue to monitor all information that the people have access to. Quote, maintaining the safe operation of the internet and a secure flow of information is a fundamental requirement for guaranteeing state security and people's fundamental interests. Promoting economic development and cultural prosperity and maintaining a harmonious and stable society, said Wang Chen, cabinet spokesman. But again, it's not just the hacking into the email accounts of dissidents that is disturbing, but the stealing of state and corporate secrets. As a strategist, James Mulvenin, told the LA Times' Jessica Nguyen, before the Chinese were going after defense targets to modernize the country's military machine. But these intrusions strike at the heart of the American innovation community. It is estimated that the value of the intellectual property being stolen by China is in the hundreds of billions of dollars. Alan Power, another expert, said Chinese hackers target Western companies with an approach dubbed 1,000 grains of sand, meaning they go after every piece of information in search of competitive intelligence. The odds of the 25 biggest companies in California not being fully compromised by the Chinese is near zero. That is true of companies across the country. And as the New York Times' Nicholas Kristof noted, if the U.S. and China ever jostle with force, Beijing may hit us not with missiles but with cyber infiltrations that shut down the electrical grid, disrupt communications, and tinker with the floodgates of dams. Turning to Wall Street, the big news was the opening of the hearings for the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, chaired by former California State Treasurer Phil Angelides. Appearing before the bipartisan panel were the CEOs of Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, and Morgan Stanley. Nothing else, the clueless bankers bolstered the case for badly needed financial regulatory reform. For starters, in questioning Goldman's CEO Lloyd Blankfein and its practice of selling mortgage securities to investors, then betting that those securities would decline in value, Angelides said, "It sounds to me a little bit like selling a car with faulty brakes and then buying an insurance policy on the buyer of those cars." Blankfein replied, "These are the professional investors who want this exposure." But then Blankfein, playing the role of village idiot, said aspects of the financial crisis were comparable to an act of God, such as an earthquake. Angelides saw an opening and pounced. "Having sat on the board of the California Earthquake Authority, acts of God will be exempt. These were acts of men and women." All four CEOs conceded that the financial system had become over-leveraged, duh, and that some regulation was needed to ensure no bank was ever considered too big to fail. J.P. Morgan's Jamie Dimon declared that a financial crisis is something that happens every 5 to 7 years. We shouldn't be surprised. Yeah, right. Dimon then said JPM never saw the big decline in housing prices, which puts him in a class with Blankfein. Regulate the street to the hilt. If it takes away from some of the animal spirits, good. Maybe a few of our brighter students will then shy away from the street and do something productive instead. But at the same time, the White House's plan to tax the banks a financial crisis responsibility fee is a bad idea. Where does it then stop? Obama knows, however, that with his declining approval numbers, just 46% in the latest CBS News survey, his tax idea plays well on Main Street. And I'm just as ticked as the next guy because I understand how much of what transpired was out-and-out fraud. Since Obama's tax is based on a bank's debt, you discourage them, though, from lending. But then the banks don't do themselves any favors in paying out an estimated $145 billion in bonuses for 2009. On the healthcare front, look no further than Tuesday's special election in Massachusetts to fill the seat held by the late Ted Kennedy. Suddenly, a victory by Republican Scott Brown appears within reach in what would be a monumental upset in a true referendum on Obama's policies, as a big part of Brown's campaign has been his pledge to veto health reform legislation, i.e., he becomes the crucial 41st vote. Meanwhile, remember how health care reform was to be partially funded by a Cadillac tax on high-cost health plans such as those carried by many union workers? Never mind. Many in this group are Democrats, of course, so a deal was cut whereby the workers are exempt until 2018. So where are we going to get the $60 billion that was to have been raised from the unions over the coming years? Elect Scott Brown, and we may never have to learn the answer, if there even is one. But don't you know, Congress is now scrambling big time to get a deal done before Brown would potentially be seated. Stocks finished down on the week after the great opening to 2010, the previous one, though the Dow Jones lost only 9.01% to close at 10,609. The S&P 500 fell 0.8%, and NASDAQ lost 1.3%. That's it for this week. I have a new computer system to work with next time, Saturday, January 23rd, so bear with me if there is a delay in posting. And I appreciate all your support over the years. Have a great week.